Creation time, or the season of creation, is marked from the 1st of September to the 4th of October each year. There is growing awareness and observation of this tradition as people sit up and take notice of the need to care for our common home amid the climate emergency we find ourselves living in. The season of creation also has a special significance for the Catholic Church, particularly since Pope Francis established the 1st of September as an annual World Day of Prayer for the Care of Creation. The season of creation is marked throughout the Christian world and celebrates the joy of creation as well as encouraging awareness-raising initiatives to protect the natural environment. We have created a series of podcasts for the season of creation this year, which will air on catholicbishops.ie and on our weekly Faithcast podcast over the coming weeks. Our second season of creation podcast is with John Sweeney, a climatologist and emeritus professor of geography at Maynooth University. I began by asking him to explain the science bit of climate change.
Well, we're now aware that our climate is changing largely as a result of what people are doing to the atmosphere. We've transformed the atmosphere by adding gases which capture heat and retain it close to the surface. And as a result of the most recent Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report, we know that those gases, which stay in the atmosphere for a long time, have the capability of warming up the Earth very quickly and with possibly disastrous consequences. The most recent report tells us that we have about between 8 and 20 years or so to get our act together to reduce massively our emissions into the atmosphere if we're to avoid a global warming of about 1.5 degrees, which is one of the target temperatures of the Paris conference. And it's picked simply because at that value, we see changes happening to the Earth which may be irrecoverable. We see the loss of many cultures and societies in the low-lying islands of the Indian Ocean and in the Pacific. We see the loss of coral reefs, for example. We see the beginning of the melt-out of Greenland, which may be irrecoverable, and all sorts of other things which will affect the generation to come and make our planet less habitable and less sustainable than it would otherwise be.
Now, John, you yourself graduated back in 1974. You've been with Maynooth University since 1978. Were we talking the same talk back then, or did we know as much back then as we know now? Were there concerns even back in the 1970s about kind of what we were doing to our environment?
There were concerns being expressed way back in the 1970s, but those concerns didn't really have as much of a scientific basis as they do today, simply because we didn't have the numerical computing power to accurately model how the Earth's climate behaved. We weren't sure about how fast and how furious the changes would be in the future. Those concerns largely have become crystallized in recent years because of the advances we've made in computing, but also because of much more effective communication of the problem to the general public. I think it's fair to say that science failed in conveying the seriousness of the situation consistently over the past two or three decades. And it's only in the last few years that people have become aware of the timescale that's involved, of the shortness of that timescale. And as a result, the public have become sensitized, largely led, it has to be said, by well-educated and by people well-versed in the science coming from our school system. The young people have been taking the lead on this topic. We've seen it with the school's actions. We've seen it with activists like Greta Thunberg, for example. And it has to be said that it has conveyed the message much more effectively than rather dull graphs and maps, which scientists tend to go in for, perhaps to the extent that they bamboozle the public and don't really convey the essential message that well.
A lot of people are bamboozled, as you say, by numbers and by graphs and by figures. But and you mentioned a lot of the young people, and they have put it in very simple terms for us, is that it's their future that we're meddling with. But I think sometimes there's still a narrative there that what can I do as an individual? What can my family do? And that we have to sit back maybe and wait for governments to lead on that. What would you say to somebody who says, sure, what difference can I make as an individual?
Well, we can all make a difference. We can all do something. If we're serious about the problem, ultimately it has to come from individual action multiplied out collectively. That's not to say that we should put the responsibility onto individuals exclusively, because they do need leadership and they do need guidance from decision makers. So I think what we have to do as individuals, of course, is take action like retrofitting our houses, of using more sustainable transport, of being more energy efficient. But also I think we have to exert our influence on those who will be making decisions on the next generation. So that means that we have to make our voices heard. We have to express our concerns to policymakers and decision makers. And as a result of those concerns being expressed, maybe through the democratic process in many countries, and also top-down enlightenment coming from supranational bodies such as the United Nations or the EU, then people who are perhaps set in their ways about not taking action at a decision-making level will have their minds changed. And we will see, I think, then really radical and really rapid action taking place. But for individuals, yes, we have responsibility, and we should use our knowledge of what we should be doing to change our way of life as well, as much as possible, because this is a problem which is a very difficult problem to solve. It's not like, for example, the ozone hole, where all we had to do was change our aerosol cans. This is a problem where we have to change our way of life and our way of living. And we have to buy into that as individuals and try and ensure that those people who have maybe have vested interests as well do not see those interests in subsuming and overriding the choices and the values that we as individuals have to make.
I read this wonderful, it's a poem, and it's about, it asks the question, it's maybe my grandchildren who I don't have at the moment, asking the question, what did you do when you knew? Surely you spoke up, surely you acted. It's a very, very powerful poem. I'll put a link to it at the end of this this podcast. But is there a frustration there? I mean, you're a climatologist and you're an expert in geography. Is there a frustration there that people haven't listened to you for too many years, and that we're all having to play catch up now?
It is to a large extent. I mean, the message I've been extolling for about 20 years, it's rewarding to see at last that society has grasped the importance of it. But I think it's a failing which scientists have, in that, for example, their career prospects are not based on communicating with the public. They're based on writing papers and scientific articles and extending their careers prospects on the basis of that. So I think there's a fundamental communication problem. But I do find it very rewarding that in the past few years, many of the issues which climatologists have been flagging for many years have now become center stage and have now become embedded in the public mind. I mean, it's not so long ago, whenever I raised the issue of climate change with a politician, they would say, nobody ever asked me about that at the doorsteps. Now it's perhaps the first question that many politicians are being asked. And I find that very rewarding. But I also find it very rewarding that the energy of youth, that the ability of youth to see that, well, this is my future you're talking about here. This is the legacy you're going to give me. Therefore, I want you to do something about it now. And there's an urgency which has now dawned on the public, which I find very satisfying indeed.
Has the intervention of someone like Pope Francis helped with the, I was pushing out the request? I mean, this is ultimately about care for creation.
I think the role of Pope Francis has been seminal in the whole process. In the build-up to the Paris conference, the issue of Laudato Si was a real landmark thing, which conveyed the seriousness of the problem in very explicit terms. I mean, when you tend to read an encyclical, you expect to see loads and loads of theology. And in fact, this was written written in a very straightforward way, which was amenable and accessible to anybody who read it. And what he did was convey the essence of the problem really superbly. It was influential in that it, I think, galvanized many countries into actually moving towards the agreement at Paris, where otherwise they might have been looking over their shoulder at their own national interests. It was also influential, I think, in terms of conveying the seriousness of the problem to other people. So Pope Francis in Laudato Si, for example, talks about how the market will not solve this problem. And that's been something that economists have yet to grasp, that this is a problem which goes beyond the sort of cold science of economics. He talks about how we need to look at all creation. We need to look at all creatures on the earth and not simply think of an anthropocentric view of creation. And I think that's very important as we face into a biodiversity as well as a climate emergency, where we're looking at mass extinction of species and mass extinction, therefore, of the life support systems on which humanity ultimately depends. And Pope Francis talks about this, and he talks about the earth being a whole pile of filth and all sorts of very common words and common language, which I think gets across to people much better than the sort of abstract concepts of scientists. And that message is something which has longevity as well. This is coming up to the 5th anniversary of Laudato Si, and many little groups around the world have embraced, have done study groups, have looked at this encyclical in great detail, and have themselves taken on the message which Pope Francis wanted to give them in a very real way. So I think we can't underestimate the role which it has had in galvanizing people and reminding them that this is not just a scientific problem. This is a problem of ethics, of morality. It's a problem of how we see ourselves as custodians of the earth, of how we see the legacy we're passing on to the next generation, of how we see ourselves as using up selfishly resources which we should be husbanding and stewarding for the next generation. All of those themes, I think, are very well developed in Laudato Si, and I think people have therefore in many cases seen the importance of it, but also embraced its message as part of that transformation of society, as part of that ecological conversion which Pope Francis talks about. And one of the things that strikes me, I think, about the Laudato Si concept is the idea of sort of the holistic nature of the problem in terms of how we approach it. It's embedded in also issues of the poor. It's embedded in issues of how society is made up in terms of the burden of climate change falling most heavily on those who can least afford to bear that burden. And it's tied up with social justice as well. And I'm very pleased that, you know, the Catholic Church has now recognized this and has seen the importance of both climate justice and social justice as being part and parcel of the same problem.
Professor John Sweeney, thank you so much for chatting to us on our Creation Time podcast, and thank you for your leadership on this issue.
Welcome.
That was Professor John Sweeney, climatologist and emeritus professor of geography at Maynooth University. On the next podcast, we will hear from Dr. Lorna Gold of Throcra on how we can be the climate generation. Thank you for listening, and remember, you can download resources for the season of creation from catholicbishops.ie.